Welcome to The Good, The Bad, and The Science, the show that breaks down the science of television and movies with a comedian and a scientist. Today, we're discussing The Fugitive. So I'll ask about vascular surgery, prosthetics, and how to survive a damn dive. But first, a short word from our sponsor. The Good, The Bad, and The Science. Hi everyone, I'm your host Ethan Edinburgh, and I've got two wonderful guests joining me today. Our first guest is a stand-up comedian, actor, writer, and director you might know from the hilarious TBS show The Dress Up Gang, or his viral video Gangster Party Line, which has sparked his new podcast, which is also called Gangster Party Line. Welcome back to the show, Brent Weinbach.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
I am thrilled to have you back. Brent, it's been, I don't even know, a year and a half or so since we last spoke about Total Recall.
Right.
As you know, I'm a gigantic fan of yours, going back even before we met. I'm like dying to have stand-up come back again just so I could watch you do stand-up. I love The Dress Up Gang. It's fantastic. If you guys have not seen that show, please go watch it. I think a lot of it is available on YouTube now. Is that correct, Brent?
Yeah, it looks like it. In fact, they even uploaded an unaired pilot as well.
Please, everyone, go watch that. It's so freaking great and perfect and wonderful. I've also heard your new podcast, which just came out, which is also fantastic and very funny. Would you mind telling us about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, it's called the Gangster Party Line Podcast, and it is based on that video that you mentioned, the Gangster Party Line, which was a fake commercial for a hotline that gangsters could call and talk crap to each other. And so, you know, the number in that video is a real number. And even though that video is pretty old at this point, people still call that number all the time and to this day. And so the podcast is me and some comedians, and we take calls from random callers and talk crap to them.
Yes, it's really great, and I'm super excited that voice you heard laughing in the background is our next guest, who's also coming on the show for the second time. He is a fellow of the American College of Surgeons with Providence Heart and Vascular Institute. It is very good to have you back, Dr. John N. Dussel.
Hey, thanks, Ethan. I'm really looking forward to this.
Which movie was it that John talked about?
John talked about Scrubs, a specific episode of Scrubs actually.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But he suggested that we watch this movie, The Fugitive, for this episode, and I'm thrilled about that. I don't know how you feel, Brent, but I love this movie.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. I mean, I saw it in the theater when it came out.
Wow.
And I think I probably saw it on TV, you know, several years later or something like that. But it's been a while since I saw it. And I did notice a lot of things I hadn't really thought about, you know, when I originally had seen it. And I've got a burning question, even just to start off with.
You want to go right off the bat. Nice.
Well, this is maybe something John can weigh in on, but what is, you know, this is you know, science. And what is the science behind Julianne Moore appearing in, you know, 2 minutes of the movie and yet getting fourth billing in the credits?
Yeah, how do you explain that?
Yeah, and then, yeah, no, I actually do know the answer to that question a little bit. But then my other question, which was that apparently I guess her role was bigger and it got cut down. And then, I imagine that her contract had her being fourth billed, you know, and they weren't able to change that. That's what I can imagine. But the same goes for Cela Ward, though. Why is she third billed when she has way less lines and screen time than you know, any of the U.S. Marshals that are, besides Tommy Lee Jones, that are in the movie? So explain that.
Yeah, explain that, dude.
Well, originally they were trying to make Julianne Moore's character a love interest. And it looks really bad if you've just had your wife murdered in front of you to, you know, skip on to the next ED doc that runs your path. I think they wanted to do that to Jane Lynch as well, but like,
right.
I mean, rightly so, and thank God. They did not make him on the run, but also on the prowl. That sounds just terrible.
Right. Imagine if he was going after both Julianne Moore and Jane Lynch's characters. That would have been crazy. Like, while he's trying to solve his wife's murder. That is,
It would have made him a lot less likable.
Oh, apparently it was Harrison Ford's urging too, that he told his request to have that storyline cut out, or both those storylines cut out, maybe. I don't know.
Thank God. Yeah, I read something similar about how he would basically rewrite scenes before they were filming, which I guess was for the better because the movie is great.
Yeah, I absolutely thought it was amazing. I, like, not only was it just like perfect 90s movie, in that there were so many like tropes that became tropes because of this movie, but also, and this is something I only realized now, is the science of it is actually remarkably good.
Oh,
like, there are some nuance to it that like could have been improved on to make it like absolute perfection, but like the way they unfolded the scene of him in the OR and the way that they like dropped breadcrumbs even for the scientific community about the liver failure and the drug and the responsibility of all of these things coalescing into that one moment, I mean, it was just perfectly done.
Interesting. I found it to be not as sound scientifically as a layman scientist. I just noticed a lot more of the contrivances plot-wise throughout the film. You know, just one after the next. It was one coincidence to the next, and that's just something I noticed. But I was still entertained by the movie. But I just was a lot more aware of just kind of almost how preposterous some of the coincidences were throughout the film. And not to mention, like, there was a lot of background music, which I wasn't as aware of when I had seen it in the past. Yeah.
Oh, like you're saying they went too far.
Well, I always find background music to be overly unnecessary, you know, kind of overdoing it, you know. But nonetheless, it was still an entertaining film for me. Yeah. But I just was more aware of things that I usually have issues with in movies and finding them in this movie.
I wanted to ask, before we get into the scientific portion of all of this stuff, and John, you went above and beyond too. You know, a lot of scientists will come on here and God bless them for even coming on to the show, but you certainly went the extra mile and sent a bunch of notes that you took during this movie. So I want to ask you about them, but just fugitive wise, Would you do anything differently if you were trying to hide from the police in a big city?
I mean, you've got to keep in mind that I am not nearly as good looking as Harrison Ford, but I'm also a 6'2", 190-pound white guy. So the privilege in this movie definitely extends beyond what I would have expected from the 2020 age.
Yes.
That being said, I don't know that I could sleep rough and then have a strange woman in a car pick me up hitchhiking with people along the street saying that there's a murderer on the loose.
Yeah, or really any time. And that goes for anybody listening as well, male, female, whatever. Don't just pick somebody up on the street and give them a ride. That's a dangerous move.
Right, so it's more, you know, something you would do differently if you were the woman driving the car.
Right, yeah, that was my question.
I wouldn't pick the random guy up off the street. I know, that is kind of interesting. I mean, I don't think, even if a murderer was not running loose in the city, right. I don't think I would, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure I would pick a man off the street.
No.
Pick up a man off the street. I mean, no offense to the man, but I just...
No, and none taken, but I don't think that he was in a big trench coat also, and it just looked...
Right.
Yeah, it was way too
It was,
chill.
Yeah, is the way he was dressed too, but no offense to anyone who wears trench coats and stuff or whatever, but...
No, or manufactures them.
Right. It is interesting how easy it is for a white man to blend into the world.
Yeah, he literally into like a police station or what was that place? He went to like talk to a prisoner and had to go through like 6 security checkpoints and nobody gives him a hard time at all.
That scene has a very funny moment in it for me when he's running from Tommy Lee Jones. And he's saying, stop that guy, he's running away or whatever. And then there's this security guard guy or something that's in, he kind of just reaches over and tries to grab Harrison Ford. I wish I could show you the clip, but Harrison Ford, you know, is running for the door that's that's closing. Mm-hmm. And there's this guy who kind of just does the weakest attempt at trying to stop him.
Oh, yes, I know the guy.
Do you know what I'm talking about? It's so funny.
Yeah.
I just thought that's the best he could do. It's just, he just kind of just reaches his arm over just barely to try to grab. Like, I don't know what he was thinking he was going to try to do with one hand and one arm. But it also kind of astounded me that nobody could stop him at that moment. You know, there was two guys. There's that security guard guy. And then there was another kind of police officer or something that was closer to the door, and it just seemed like, how is no one stopping him at this point?
Yeah, everybody's yelling. It's like very clearly him. He's not in a crowd. And the dude, you're right, just like reaches over the way that you do at like a long dinner table, like when you reach for garlic bread, but it's, you're right, not really reaching for it. You're just making a signal that someone should help you.
Exactly. It was like, maybe he was trying to signal to a guy off screen on the other side of Harrison Ford to, oh, can you pass the Harrison Ford to over to me? You know, maybe that's what he was trying to do or something.
Yeah, yeah. Signal. Can you help me with that, with this fugitive situation? I'm kind of busy.
Can you help me with this Kimball? Can you pass the Kimball, please?
Pass me a little Kimball, would you?
Can we just reflect for a second on the fact that he was visiting a guy who was in jail with one arm, who was arrested for armed robbery?
Yeah,
like they hit that point three or four times and I could not get over it.
Right. I actually thinking about the movie afterwards, I actually almost blocked out. I actually thought to myself, now they just said that guy had done robbery, right? I was thinking in my head, because there's no way he did. I was thinking, did they really say armed robbery? I was thinking, no, they must have just said robbery. I just thought.
You corrected it.
Yeah, head. Yeah. After, when I was thinking about it afterwards, I thought, they didn't say armed robbery, right? Because that would be just too...
On the nose?
Like a joke, yeah.
I mean, I wanted to actually get your perspective on that, Brent, because I feel like, I don't think it was like comedic at first, but as the movie went on, I did feel like, oh, they're kind of using this prosthetic one-armed guy as like a comedic device, because they mention it so many times. There's so many people that mention like, oh yeah, you said the one-armed guy did it, and it's like, are we supposed to, is this an ongoing joke, or like what, like a one-armed guy really did kill his wife, so like what is wrong with all of you that you're making fun of him?
Well, you know, all I can say to speak to that is that the main one-arm man, the one who did do it,
Sykes,
he had one of the funniest lines that I remember from watching the movie years ago that stuck out to me the most, was when he answers the phone at one point, he goes, yeah, talk to me.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just such a funny way to answer the phone that I used it for years afterwards.
Talk to
myself.
Me.
I go, you talk to me. Yeah, talk to me.
It's like, yeah, that's why I called you.
It's just, it's so funny. That's just the funniest line for me.
Also, I wanted to ask if this felt anti-prosthetic, if I may, because he boils down the suspects to five people that have had, quote, hybrid prosthetic implants, which I don't even know what that means. So maybe that's something you can explain to me too. But then we find out that three out of five of those patients are either criminals or dead. Which is like, what are the odds of that?
First things first is like, upper extremity prostheses are actually more rare than the lower extremity components. And I have a lot more experience with lower extremities. Mm. But the hybrid idea, which I was shocked to find out was kicking around in the 90s, has really evolved. The problem is that a prosthetic doesn't work quite as well as normal tissue. So when you get a prosthetic, making its ease of use and decreasing the amount of energy that you have to expend using that prosthetic then will facilitate your ability to transition back to better function. And so right now they have adaptive prostheses that can send information to the joints that are supposed to be moving, or the amount of pressure that's being placed on the fit on the extremity. There's a lot of ongoing research and innovation to really make these as seamless as humanly possible. And there's like phenomenal stories. One of my favorite patients is a double amputee, and he's still playing golf. He's shooting TikToks now.
Wow.
But yeah.
TikTok and golf.
It's really quite phenomenal. Yeah. I think the point was that this prosthetic was a very specific type. It had a hinged joint in it. And so when you've got a lab like that and you're using this newest model, it really doesn't surprise me that there are very few of those out there. And then to your further point, the idea that these people are either criminals or dead. I can't explain the two criminals, but I can tell you that a lot of the time, when you're dealing with people who have amputations, the reason they got the amputation is what will ultimately cause their mortality. If you have a traumatic accident, well, then you're probably going to go back to being pretty much how you were beforehand. However, if you have gotten an amputation because of things like extensive out-of-control diabetes, long-term smoking, atherosclerosis, limb salvage then becomes an issue, but you've got blood vessels everywhere in your body, and so they're not just affecting your limbs, they're affecting every part of you. And that could potentially be the reason that these other people had their problems.
Hmm. Well, on that wonderfully positive, smiley, happy note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to throw to our sponsor, and we'll be right back to learn more.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
So we're back, and the huge question that I have here is what you do, John, because I understand that you have like the same job that Richard Kimball had. Is that correct?
He was much, much better at it than I am. But yeah, we have pretty similar gig.
Did watching this movie originally like influence you into going into this field?
So I was 7 when this came out. I didn't see this until I was well into the future. No, I got into vascular surgery when I was in training. And just the amount of stuff that we're able to do is absolutely mind-blowing. We get the coolest toys.
Okay, so first of all, I think that your answer to Brent's question is yes. You just tucked it away in your subconscious. But somewhere you knew I want to be like him. So,
oh, yeah, 100%.
But you
it's either this or Space Pirate, so...
You couldn't do that one, so
couldn't do Space Pirate. No.
So, what does a vascular surgeon do? Can you tell me like how the surgeries range from more basic to more complicated? Let's say.
Yeah. So the overarching idea of what a vascular surgeon is essentially a plumber for the body. If the pipes are clogged, we open them up. If the pipes are bleeding or broken, we fix them. And then if the pipes are abnormal, we replace them. It's it can range from anywhere in the body to very delicate and microscopic work to broad bone saws. And it basically runs the gambit of pretty much everything. You've got blood vessels everywhere in your body, and anytime they go wrong, we're the people they call.
And do you get called into the hospital like he did towards the beginning of the movie, like
when you're coming home from a charity dinner or something like that?
Yeah, you're winding down
with your wife. Yeah, yeah. And do you ever get calls on your car phone, as opposed to your cell phone?
This scene particularly was a really fun one for me because I do get called regularly overnight because people have blood vessel problems at every time of the day. Generally, if I'm at a function, my wife and I will take two different cars, and it got an audible laugh when we got to the scene where she says, "Oh, I'll wait up for you," because there's nothing I'm getting called into the hospital for that she's gonna stay awake for.
You're never called in to like sign a paper.
Yeah, it's never like, oh, hey, glad you're on call. Okay, you can turn around. No, it's a situation like this where, like, someone is having a active bleeding problem and it needs to be addressed immediately.
Wow. Oh, and so your wife doesn't put rose petals on the floor for you when you come home that later that night or something?
I've been married for 10 years, man. If the kids are asleep, we have just the best time listening to Ethan's podcast.
Those are the red rose petals then, is the
exactly.
podcast.
Exactly.
The podcast, they're sort of audio petals.
In 93, it was rose petals, and now in 2021, it's podcast.
It's podcast.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Unfortunately, we really have fallen a long, long way in our romance.
Or we've elevated,
Right? Yeah, you don't give yourself enough credit, Ethan.
Oh, elevated. Thank you so much.
Evolved.
We have evolved, yes. And this is just, my own kind of paranoia seeping through the podcast, but like, are there things that we can do, advice you have, so that we can avoid surgery, so that we can avoid meeting you?
Oh man, you're like, this is like the perfect layup question.
Great.
Absolutely, Ethan. And you know what, it is the most boring stuff you can possibly think of. Like, exercise, get your heart rate up 30 minutes a day, maybe 4 to 5 days a week. Don't smoke cigarettes or use tobacco products. Keep a relatively small amount of animal fats in your diet, and essentially try to keep hydrating. Like, it's really the boring stuff.
So wait a second. Hold on. Let me ask you this. Can you do this? Can you keep the animal fats out and not smoke, but also not exercise? Can we settle on
Does
that?
It balance
like two
out?
Out of three, or
you can do anything you want. It's just the amount of time it's going to take. Everyone is eventually going to wind up in my office. It's just how quickly you get there.
Yikes!
You can exercise your way through a lot of vascular problems. Some of it is genetics, so you'll want to know where your genetics lie in that regard. But a yearly physical with your primary care physician and just doing the basics to keep you healthy will really keep you out of a lot of trouble.
And is it cholesterol levels is the main thing we're concerned about when we go get a checkup?
Correct. Yeah, well, at least that's one of the ones that we focus on specifically. But like things like exercise tolerance is also pretty important.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's boring at all. I think getting ripped is really cool.
Yeah.
And
I think sweating is tight,
Dude.
I love to get wet,
Hell
and by
yeah.
wet I mean sweaty. Actually, I have a quick question. This just came to mind just now, does the word sweat, well, it's almost like the word, I know it's not this, but isn't it interesting how the word sweat almost sounds like a mix of the words wet and maybe salty? Like salty wet,
Yeah.
And that's equals sweat. That's because that's what sweat is. It's kind of just this salty wetness.
Salty liquid. Yeah. Is that where it came from, John?
God, I was not prepared.
In all the notes you sent me, this wasn't part of it?
No. Shockingly, the etymology of sweat really didn't come up.
Well, did the word used to be schwet? Or it's like, did it used to be like a Yiddish thing?
Yeah.
Shvetting.
That's how my family says it.
I am shvetting right now. I am shvetting.
See, what's boring about this?
Isn't it schwitz?
Yeah, schwitzing. Maybe it came from schwitzing. Yeah,
maybe it came from schwitzing.
Yeah.
Schwitzing.
Like most English words, it came from Yiddish.
It came from Yiddish.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Okay, wait. So speaking of the surgery, scene where he gets called in.
Yeah.
How was that? Did that strike you as like, this is totally great and perfect and everything they're doing and saying is right? Or was that like, oh, this is clearly movie surgery?
Yeah, when they showed a quick shot of the the blood and stuff,
yep.
did that look like real blood and stuff?
Oh yeah, no, this was one of the parts of it that like really excited me. Like so he gets called in, right, and he walks into the operating room. Already you've got two attending physicians there, which is perfect because that's exactly what you'd expect to see. He's got a big big incision overlying the liver where it should be. There's a lot of blood. And then they're rattling off a bunch of information for him, which, sounds just kind of like background dialogue. But what they're saying is that this guy is in fulminant liver failure. And it wasn't until an hour later that they're talking about these people who get the drug, who get this liver failure. What they were doing was essentially like giving you the heads up that that was coming, if you knew what they were talking about. The PT, or the prothrombin time, they said that was 3 times normal. Now, what you want is a time that will allow you to clot, and what they're saying is that he is not clotting at all. This patient is bleeding from everywhere. When they say needle hole bleeding, that is a very nuanced type of bleeding, which describes when you have a needle and a piece of string on the end of it, it's called shotted. It basically takes up a very similar size as the needle. So when you pass the needle through tissue, it doesn't bleed around that. It just maintains that entire area with the pressure from the needle, from the suture that's still underneath there. Well, what they're saying is that even though they're passing these stitches, that it's still bleeding from the area where they're putting their needle through, which this guy was in very rough shape in the operating room, the patient, that is. And then when you have these bleeding coagulopathies, a lot of very, very smart surgeons suggest packing the belly, so basically putting a bunch of coagulation factors in and pushing down, and then bringing the patient to the ICU with the belly still open in order to warm the patient up, correct the acidosis, and correct the coagulopathy, and take them out of that lethal triad, because otherwise the patient is just going to expire on the table.
Okay, so this is legit. You're saying that they...
It is awesome.
Wow.
Awesome. The only critiques I would have is the glasses that he puts on with the loops in the middle of them. We do that ourselves because the pupillary distance needs to be right. You need to adjust them. And then besides that, he holds the instruments wrong. Like the way that you hold the instrument that he got, and then the way that he cuts his beard later with the scissors, no surgeon is ever going to cut their anything like that. It's so ingrained in us that it's like, it just seems like sacrilege.
What do you mean the way that he cut the beard?
So the way that he's holding the scissors between his first two fingers,
oh,
you have zero control over the blade like that.
Oh.
What you do is you hold it, if you have to hold the shears like that, what you do is you hold it between your thumb and your fourth finger, and that way you have not only the control of your middle finger to actually like maintain pressure on the blade, but you can direct it like you would a pencil with your first finger. That is the only thing that I found that was like, okay, this is not perfect, but like the setup, the style of bleeding, the lab values that they were describing, and then like the surgery itself, I mean, it's exactly what you want. And then, oh man, my favorite part is when he asks for the suction right off the bat, because when you walk into an OR like this, the tension is so high that you need to find a way of like settling everyone's blood pressure, not only the patient's. So what you do is you try and clear up the scene, and you just try and see what's going on. And so getting suction and doing some irrigation where you basically clean out the surgical field, it is a way like everybody can decrease their collective heart rate and blood pressure and like reevaluate the situation. And that's really why like the best surgeons I know are the ones who are early to call in help. Because honestly, once it gets to a point where it's just complete melee, it's too far gone for any critical thinking to happen. You're in damage control.
If Brent and I had to perform emergency surgery, the right move right off the bat is let's suck up all this crap. Somebody get in here and vacuum up all this crap. And then everybody will chill out.
Somebody get in here and suck.
Yeah, is that
can somebody suck this stuff out here?
Is that what you're saying, John's words?
Oh man, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Can I get a suck? Talk to me. Somebody give me a suck over here.
Somebody give me a suck. That'll help me chill out.
Do you ever do kind of funny voices when you're in the operating room, or are you not allowed to joke around in the operating room?
Ooh, great question.
In the situation that Dr. Kimball found himself in, it would not be a time to be making jokes.
If you're making jokes, isn't there a possibility that someone could, you know, if they're laughing too much, they can, you know, be not as steady with in any kind of instruments? That could be a problem, right?
Absolutely not. No. So in the OR, like all kidding aside, our only priority is patient safety, and anything that interferes with that goes way out the window.
Right.
If that is taken care of, then you can move on to the speed and the beauty of the operation. But
and
until then, yeah, exactly. Although there, so what In the coagulation cascade, so when you're trying to make fresh clot, there are like a couple ways of going about doing that. One of them is a drug called protamine, which will reverse the effects of heparin. And when you give that, you have to wait approximately 3 to 5 minutes for it to circulate through the body. And that's when we can make our jokes.
Can ham it up.
And do have you ever gotten squirted?
Oh my God.
Like hardcore? Like, did you ever get just like drenched in blood by someone's blood and stuff?
Absolutely.
Really?
There's a phrase in vascular called audible bleeding. Mm-hmm. You know, and what that means is that when you're dealing with some of the larger vessels of the body, you can hear the blood rushing out of a hole being made.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a bad situation, but yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Where does it blast you? Like have you ever gotten the face? Like just a big,
splash zone.
Did you ever get hosed in the face by blood or what?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh gosh. Jeez. Wow.
We take very strong precautions. So we have personal protective equipment, which will prevent any interaction with, anything coming off of the field. But yeah, that stuff gets soaked for sure.
Wow. Does that kind of do you get scared ever about getting hit with all this blood all the time and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this for about a decade, so. Right.
But it's still yucky blood.
Actually, some of the best surgeons I've met, one of them was a plastic surgeon. She said, never look away from the blood because the blood is going to show you exactly where it's coming from. And the best way to control that is just one finger putting pressure on the hole. I mean, that's the takeaway from this. If there's ever any bleeding, just put a finger on it and hold pressure until help arrives.
Well,
that's
suck first, but then, yeah.
Suck? No, first
don't suck until I get there.
Suck and then plug.
Suck and plug.
Exactly.
Suck and plug, yeah. It says every surgeon's, you know, that's the motto of every surgeon. Suck and plug.
Just plumbing for humans.
Yep. Another perfect spot here to hear a word from our sponsor, which I believe is a product called Suck and Plug. And then we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go. Back to the show about science.
Okay, so we got to talk about this. There's a huge train wreck. Scene in this movie, which is awesome, and I actually forgot how close of a call it was that he jumps from the bus as it's getting hit by a train. I love so many things, and honestly could probably do a whole podcast episode about just this scene, but you mentioned it in your notes, John. You were saying that that pulling the guy from the bus is just EMT 101.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was an EMT in Boston before I went to med school.
Wow.
And so, like, the first thing they teach you is personal safety, because the last thing you want is to have two sick people in an area. And so, like, if they're laying in a puddle of questionable, or if they're, like, there's live active electrical wire, or a train is barreling down on you, you don't go running in. But, you know, Dr. Kimball is a guy who obviously has very strong values, so the next thing you do is get the person to safety before starting to try and treat them. And that's, you know, EMT 101.
You know, that the train and the bus is still where they shot it, apparently. And
in Hillsborough.
Yeah,
North Carolina.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
They just left it?
Yeah, you can visit it and just check it out. And there's no one. It's just like it's just there in the woods or whatever. You know?
Why would they leave it? Why wouldn't they have a plan to get rid of it after the movie shoot? I don't understand that.
I think they just thought it looked cool, maybe, and they thought, hey, we'll just leave this here. This is kind of cool. People can check it out, you know, and it's just, you know.
That's what I'm going to say next time I make a mess, like in the kitchen. Right. I'm just going to be like, well, I mean, I think it looks pretty cool. Like, people are going to like this.
Well, next time you leave a six-pack of soda, like one of those plastic ring things, you know, like you leave that in the ocean, you know, you just say it's cool how it floats around in the ocean like that.
Yeah,
you know?
People for 30 years are going to want to check this out, trust me.
Yeah, when you like, you know, crumple up next time you like throw a cigarette, you know, onto the street near where there's, you know, maybe some oil leaking or whatever stuff,
yeah,
just say it looks cool. People could visit this.
Yeah, that looks dope. This is like art. And you know I love cigarettes.
Right. Right. We all, you know.
Not everyone. No. Definitely not the best.
Oh, I've actually never smoked a cigarette in my entire life.
Yeah, I was forced to smoke a little bit of one once, and I have never gone back. It was disgusting. Sorry.
I'm just saying, you know, you can just leave trash around and just, you know, say that, you know, people are going to want to come check this out. You know, it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's huge.
You have to shoot it too, though. So if you get out your phone or something, or if you have a happen to have a camcorder on you, you got to make sure you are shooting something with it to legitimize it, though, you know.
Yep. Yeah. And then leave it there. That's crazy. I did not know about that. That's wild. So what about stealing the ambulance? I think that was something that both of us also clocked. Like, would you be able to even steal an ambulance? I feel like, because he does a lot of like really smart moves in this movie. And then when he stole the ambulance, I was thinking like, wouldn't they know about this like immediately? Like, I assume they kind of need those.
And also, would you, if you didn't have a background in as an EMT, would you know how to do that, to drive one or whatever, or operate it?
They handle terribly. They are garbage vehicles to drive. I'm sure there are some good ones, but like your average ambulance is a really awful car to steal. It's really, I mean, it's quite conspicuous. Like you can see this thing, and it's. I'm sure that they've like got them tracked as well.
I got a ride in an ambulance once that was not an emergency. It was an old ambulance that this anarchist couple and their baby, they were driving from San Francisco to Los Angeles, and I saw a Craigslist ad for Craigslist rideshare that said, we're driving out of Los Angeles in an ambulance. I thought it was a joke, and they showed up, and they picked me up. It was in an ambulance that they had, some old ambulance, and it ran on vegetable oil.
What?
And we stopped on them in the middle of the road. I mean, in the middle of the trip at one point, and he scooped out disposed oil, vegetable oil from, or cooking oil from this Red Robin that was on the road. And he said it was so clean that he didn't even have to filter it. And so we just went in that. And yeah, we were riding on vegetable oil and smelled like French fries.
Wow. Unbelievable. And then they didn't try to kidnap you or kill you, it sounds like.
No, it was close, but no, I fought them off.
Do you still have both of your kidneys, though?
I don't. They didn't take them from me, but I sold them on the black market myself. So
you sold both of them?
Yeah, I sold them. Yeah, I didn't need. I felt like I didn't need them. Who needs them? You know?
You know what you do need in this world? Cash.
Exactly. Yeah, money, baby. That's what it's all about. Who needs kidney when you got money? Yeah. You know?
Damn right.
By the way, speaking of that scene with the ambulance, I mean, that was one thing that was a little bit. I mean. There's a series of contrivances that you would expect. I mean, there's inciting incidents that are, okay, this combination of things happened to create this situation. But the timing of the guard, I don't know if he was a guard arriving in the ambulance just as when, you know, Dr. Kimball was trying to steal an ambulance. It was sort of just kind of perfect timing. I mean, it was a little maybe too perfect timing. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree. And he also, that's the scene where he yells like, tell the attending he's got a puncture in the upper gastric area. And then one of those guards says like, wow, you could tell that just by looking at his face. What was that? It doesn't question it at all.
I just, again, you know, Harrison Ford was doing fine, right? He was in hiding perfectly, and then he happens, the one kind of dingy, you know, apartment that he decides to pick happens to be one that where the son of the like landlord or whatever is some kind of criminal or, you know, or drug dealer,
yeah,
or something like that.
Dealing drugs to kids.
It happens to be that, and he happens to get busted when Harrison Ford is staying there, which at this particular time.
And the cops that are busting him don't check the house. Like, he probably has drugs in there. He's a drug dealer. And they're like, now we got our man. Let's go.
Exactly. They didn't decide to check the house. And then, I don't know. It was just, again, that was, I mean, I found there to be instances like that all throughout the movie where it was just, everything was perfectly, I mean, everything worked out to his disadvantage and advantage perfectly, you know, like in a way that felt a little bit, you know, unbelievable. But for, you know, an action movie or whatever, you know, kind of, you know, it was like, hey, all right, you know, it's whatever. It's still fun to watch. Yeah, you know?
I felt myself asking too, Brent, like, is this too much? Like, if I was writing this, that would come up in my Absolutely. Mind of like, is this too much? Is this too Absolutely. Coincidental? And then any time that came up for them, clearly the answer was no.
Right.
Do it because it's too much. Do it. Go. Right. We're going there every time.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, I have to ask about the dam. I went back. Like, you know, I've never watched this movie while taking notes, okay? I've seen it multiple times, but I've always just enjoyed it. This time, while taking notes, I had to instant replay the jump off the dam like 3-4 times. And if you guys haven't done that out there, I implore you to do so because it is hilarious. It looks like it's like a either CGI or a dummy that they throw or something.
It's 100%
it's a dummy.
Dummy,
yeah.
Total dummy.
Yeah, a dummy. This dummy looks like he's going head first into the wall, into the dam, like immediately. Yep. So, I mean, and they make several jokes right after that about, hey, come on, man, nobody's going to survive this. Like, they're telling Tommy Lee Jones, like, this guy's fish food, it's over. But, I mean, do you think there's any chance this guy survives the dam fall?
All right, so I saw this question coming, and I broke out my calculator, my protractor, I had a mechanical pencil, then I went back to first principles, and I did the full math on this guy, okay? So, the Choa Dam, it's 69 meters, or 220 feet tall. Ford's mass is around 86.6 kilograms, based off of what he said earlier. And then the fall is about 3.74 seconds, which means velocity on impact is about 36 meters per second, or 82 miles an hour. Okay, so to put that into perspective, a pedestrian struck by a car going at 58 miles an hour is going to be 90% fatal. But I know there's a big but coming, and that's you need to factor in position, posture, body type, body shape when going into the water, the wind, the surface tension, and the water churn,
and thickness of beard at the time, you know, whatever,
it was
or
a
lack
thick,
of beard.
Thick beard.
So the world cliff diving record.
Yeah.
In not same circumstances, but similar, is 54 meters, and the guy did okay. And so maybe he survives. But then...
Okay.
The maybe is a science maybe, okay? It's like he's got less than a 1% chance at walking away from this. The only record that I can see that someone survived like a 68-meter fall was in 1985 off the Golden Gate Bridge, where a 28-year-old cracked his ribs and bruised his leg. Other falls from that height into water similar to this is 98% fatal. So, like, there's no way he is walking away from this with a cut on his arm. I mean, I can safely say that he would not be great.
I mean, this is one part I actually was fine with, you know, like it, because I just was like, the movie called attention to the fact that it was like, it would be a 1 in a million chance that he survived it, you know, and it was presented as something that no one really should survive this, you know, but he happened, mm-hmm. he did, you know, so I was thought, okay, fair enough, you know, I mean, to me, I actually found it less believable that, you know, that he stayed in that place where that the guy was a drug dealer, you know. I found that to be less believable in a weird way, you know, or something like that, you know.
But Brent, please answer me this, buddy, because you're a Hollywood guy, okay, over here, TV shows, you know, the behind the scenes, behind the curtain stuff. Why make it look like that dummy is going head first right away into the
right.
wall?
Well, I the way I actually understood that part was that he I think, as I recall, what happened was is he dives in. I mean, Harrison Ford does a head first dive when he jumps. And then the dummy, it seemed, was the head was up, I think. The head was right side up. And then, or something like that. Or it was maybe turning. I just thought, you know, yeah, he's doing flips, you know, as he starts diving, and then the wind, you know, the wind or the water or whatever, it flips him around, so he's right side up, and then he's kind of doing like a, you know, arms and legs all spread apart. I don't know. It just seemed like, you know, it's a crazy time, you know. There's
93. Who knows? Jurassic Park's out.
Oh, but what didn't check out as much, though, aside from the drug dealer thing, was, you know, he goes into the guy's house, you know, Takumi's house, and it's like, I don't know, just the ease at which he found these photos. There just happens to be these stacks of photos laying around where he can, or not laying around, but just he looks in his desk and there's stacks of photos, and it's just, there's such incriminating photo. I don't know, just the incriminating, he finds everything he needs so easily, you know? It was just,
yeah, quickly.
And it was just, I mean, what a, you know, and then even finding the arm that he had happened to have, like, he wasn't, the fact that he was wearing, that he finds the arm that he dealt with during the attack in his drawer, right. It just was all so easy. It was just all there for him to, and he's not home. He's also not home too. I mean, whatever. I guess he called ahead of time to check he wasn't home, but you know, it's like.
Thank God the guy had one arm, because if not, I have no clue how he would have found him.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, exactly. I mean,
then he would have been really screwed.
Well, he would have been, yeah, definitely.
Real quick, because we're running short on time, would there ever be a reason for a nurse to be on roller skates? What was that?
No, definitely not.
Okay.
OSHA.
Very cool.
OSHA would have shut that place down so darn quickly, and Jayco would have had a field day. Just, no. Just, oh, man. And then, like, when Julianne Moore is talking about the fractured sternum being stable, that was just like, I mean, you did so much homework on the OR scene. You didn't think to like fact check one thing in the emergency department. Like, really not great.
I just have two quick things. One, when Harrison Ford gives himself stitches, and you know, kind of, you know, he has that gash or whatever in his stomach, uh-huh. And he fixes himself up. Could you do that?
Definitely.
Okay. And next question is
baller.
This is kind of multi-part a little bit, but you know, when he's dealing with that kid's the kid who got injured, and he's dealing with his, he's looking at his charts and stuff or whatever, and he's kind of reassigning what's wrong with him and stuff like that. Did that all check out for you? Or
yeah, can a janitor order emergency surgery?
No, he held up the X-ray wrong. Like, I mean, this is 1990s. We're talking, so all of the stuff is written down by hand. You could easily fake a document. That's why we've all gone to electronic medical records. The films you'd see on the computer now, they were with the patient, and he holds it up, and he's holding it in reverse. Yeah. So that's really the only thing I saw. And then the X-ray that they have is for someone who's like probably 4 years younger than that kid. Uh-huh. But besides that, I mean, like, the kid had, I think they were talking about the kid when he had the fractured sternum, and like, that's not a stable situation. The guy needs to go to the OR and get that fixed.
And one thing is that I don't know if you guys noticed, but it seemed to me that they reused not a take, but although I did read that they did reuse a take when he's running in the woods, but during this scene with the kid, they reused. It seems they used a different take of the same dialogue at a different part. So he asks him, you know, how are you feeling? And he's like, oh, it hurts or whatever when I breathe. And he goes, yeah, you know, like that. And then he's like, how you doing, kid? He says, how you doing, kid? He's like, oh, it hurts. And he goes, yeah, like that. And then when he's in the elevator or something like that, he says the exact same thing. He goes like, how you doing, kid? He's like, it hurts. He's like, yeah. but it was a different performance though, you know?
Right.
And I just thought, I think they just used, they needed something to put in there, and they used a different take from earlier.
Yep, you're right. And the kid says the exact same thing. You're right. He says like, my chest hurts or something like that.
But
the same
also
way.
The way that he said, yeah, like that, it was kind of like, I don't know. It sounded kind of funny to me the way he said, yeah. What I wanted to ask John was if you would say it like that, you know? Like, would you ever go like, how you doing? How you feeling? You know, and they say, oh, it hurts. And would you go, yeah?
Yeah.
I can honestly say that I've never done that.
Okay.
I also probably wouldn't caress the face of my patient as he's being wheeled away from me. Mm-hmm. I mean, independent of how close a relationship we have, that's just...
Oh. Actually, that's really hilarious. But the would you let me know, like, you had to caress his face, you know, like, you should start doing that maybe, you know, after you're done working on somebody, even if they're not even conscious, you know, just after you're done, you know, you did a successful operation, just like wipe their face real quick with, you know, take the glove off first, but you know,
suck, plug, and caress.
But actually, would that ever happen though when Julianne Moore asks the janitor to, you know, take somebody somewhere? Would that happen, you think?
I I think, very unlikely. They were talking about a mass casualty situation. Uh-huh. So rules get changed a little bit. It becomes more like a triage system. And if a guy is standing on a corner and not doing anything, and he's got sufficient identification, he may or may not be asked to do something. But I think it's very, very unlikely. Mm-hmm. Same amount of unlikely that Harrison Ford is surviving a double gainer off of the Genoa Falls.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is he's going to...
A Peter Pan.
In janitor's outfit, he's going to get enlisted to start transporting.
Well, listen, I think we could do a whole nother podcast on the big pharma side of this about doctors receiving money from industry sponsors. Yeah. But we'll say
that's actually something I didn't even understand at the end, actually. Was just, you know, Nichols, when he, why did he kind of, you know, when he asked Nichols, say, hey, can you tell Bones that I need, you know, I'm going to come over there or whatever? Why did Nichols kind of help him at that point?
Oh, yeah, help them immediately.
Well, I don't understand why he would help him with the Bones thing, because that is some incriminating stuff that he's on. Nichols must have known at that point, oh, he's on to some stuff that can, you know, be incriminating to
me. Totally.
And I know that he... And it's also just interesting to me that he obviously sends the one-armed guy to go kill him over there, but it's just, I don't understand why he would kind of help lead him to incriminating evidence.
I thought about the same exact thing. You're absolutely correct. And he could have got out of it in so many ways. Like, he could have told him, yeah, I'm going to tell Bones, no problem. And then all he would have to say to Bones is, hey, listen, Richard Kimball just called me. He's a fugitive. He murdered his wife. He's a convicted murderer.
Right.
If he comes in, because he said he might be coming in, call the police. Get him the fuck out of there. And Bones even doesn't know what's going on. He even says, hey, how'd that thing go with your wife?
Right.
That thing, it's not like she got a promotion. She was murdered.
Yeah, I just didn't get that thing with your wife, right?
That thing with your wife, dude? That thing where you killed your wife? Anyway, I found that unbelievable. It's all just to set up Harrison Ford going like, it's not over yet.
That's a pretty good line.
Yeah, it's a good line, but the setup was just absolutely absurd. Like, Bones has to know the minimal sliver of knowledge.
He's like, it's not over yet. He's like, oh, really? All right, I better read up. I better check that out then.
Yeah, don't.
Oh, it's
don't,
not
don't.
Over? Oh, I better read up on that a little bit. Yeah, is there any newspaper?
No. Don't. Bones, don't read up
Bones?
On it.
How out of the loop is Bones? I mean, geez, you know.
He lives down there, I guess.
Right.
Well, but then he protects the guy. Like, he does all this stuff, and he's like, okay, maybe he did do some reading, but then he's like, on Ford's side.
I know. And another great line there, by the way, when the cops come in and they're like, hey, can I, you know, is there a bathroom around here I can use? And he goes, I haven't seen Richard Kimball.
Yeah, that is hilarious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're like, that's not what I asked you.
Yeah, he's like, hey, do you have the time by any chance? He's like, I've never heard of Richard Kimball. I don't know what he's all about. I never heard anything about the thing with his wife. I don't know what, you know. Now talk to me.
So, yeah, like I said, I mean, I can't believe the time has gone by already. But John, you wanted to, I think, do a quick COVID update. And I would love to hear it from you. I'll tell you at least what's bothering me about it. I don't know how you feel, Brent, but I got my first dose. I'm getting my second Pfizer dose in less than a week, in about 5 days.
Nice.
I'm psyched about it. And
awesome.
There are people in my life, I'm not going to name names, but there are people in my life, maybe there are in yours too, who are waiting, who are, you know, I don't think they would describe themselves as anti-vax, but they're like not getting it yet because of blah, 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 dot, dot, dot. And so, could you weigh in on that, doctor, and just tell me your thoughts on it?
I got it. I got my second dose a week ago, by the way.
Nice. And congrats.
The one piece of evidence, or the one piece of information that I found that can sway people is that literally every healthcare provider I have met, be it tech, nurse, doctor, someone affiliated with the medical profession, is getting theirs. There is absolutely no sense in waiting. The parallel between this movie and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine are a really nice one, specifically because when you have data safety and monitoring boards associated with companies that are creating things like Provasic or like the adenovirus vaccine versus the mRNA vaccines, they take every complication very, very seriously. So, like, the plausibility that this movie could have existed in the 90s? Probably possible, because in 2010 they did this thing called the Sunshine Act, where now people have to disclose where they're getting money from, specifically when it comes to pharmaceuticals and physicians. That relationship has been essentially publicized. When it comes to the stop on the J&J administration, it was to give us time to evaluate the problem that was being had, and also to educate providers. What they're describing, these six cases out of 6 million, were a type of clotting, which is essentially the opposite of what was going on with the patient in this movie. They were having these novel clots, which do not respond to the drugs that we normally do. And so it doesn't make it any less effective. It makes it slightly less safe, but slightly in the way that we still are suggesting that people get the J&J vaccine. The only reason that we needed to spend that time and get more information was so that providers knew that if a person came in with the J&J vaccine and they were having headaches, stomach pain, or other symptoms of clotting, including pain in the legs or edema or the swelling of the legs, we would know what to treat them with. And so we do know, which they gave us the appropriate amount of time. We've started re-administering the vaccine. And, you know, in order for us to get herd immunity, we have to be somewhere between 70 and 80%. And so people who are not getting the vaccine now are essentially just delaying reopening America.
Okay. Well, thank you for the advice. Thank you both for watching this fantastic film and speaking with me today. Brent, is there something you want to tell people about? I mean, obviously they should listen to your new podcast, The Gangster Party Line.
The new podcast, Gangster Party Line Podcast, on iHeartRadio or Apple Music or wherever you want to, you know, wherever you get podcasts. And it's, I think there's two episodes out right now, or actually maybe by the time this comes out, there'll be three, and there's going to be 12 total. And the 12th one's going to be really cool.
Fantastic. Okay. I can't wait. We'll have a big, in-person, party by the time the 12th one comes out also. Dr. Dussel, what can I say, buddy? Thank you. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for coming back. Your research and notes, that went into this, I really, really appreciate. Anything else you want to leave people with?
No, it's my pleasure. Get the vaccine. I'd really love for July 1st to come around and celebrate my birthday with actual people.
Yes. Get the vaccine so that you can hang out with Dr. Dussel on your birthday. On his birthday, excuse me.
Exactly.
And your birthday if it's after that date.
Or if it's on that date.
Yeah. Maybe you guys have the same birthday.
You know, I'll celebrate together. You know, Dr. Dussel wants to celebrate your birthday.
With you.
On his. On his. With you.
All right. Thank you both. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure, man.
Bad Science is a Seeker podcast produced by Emily Feld and me, Ethan Edinburgh.
And the executive pro damn dive deucer is Brett Kushner.
And our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate. Oh, follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Pod. If there's a movie you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver, but it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.